Tom Papa, and you're listening to ShowbizMonkey.com. Where else would I be at this point in my career? Around this town, I'm all right. Around this town, I'm all right. I mean, no consequence when you're playing with the fire. Move to the left, man. When you first started doing comedy 20 years ago in London, in the UK, could you have ever imagined that you'd find yourself living in Canada now, doing all the different things you've done?
I guess not. Like, that's very specific. That would be kind of like, well, you'd imagine you'd have a yellow dresser. Like, I knew I'd be somewhere.
I guess. I mean, did you think your career would take you to another part of the world and kind of be doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, I guess it's funny because like touring was always an option. Like, it's a weird little thing doing street theater in that I immediately met all the people that were sort of established in London, sort of in the street theater scene, and doing paid bookings and being invited to festivals overseas. So in Canada, in fact, specifically, was already sort of on the cards as one of the places that you got to go, and you got to. You do a few gigs, and it pays for you to see this new country. So Canada was one of the first that I'd come to. Doing sort of moving indoors was like the big deal back then. It's funny thinking about that because I was like, oh yeah, I often forget I was a street performer and forget that I used to have some skills. So that was like the big deal of I don't think I could have imagined I'd be doing a bunch of different one man shows and then sort of. Occasionally being on TV, although that might just be a lack of imagination more than anything else. And certainly, I don't think I specifically imagined I would move to Canada, although years before I ever did, it became a thing of, could I live? Oh, you could live here. That'd be nice. And that was, and then when I met my wife, she was like, you're going to move to Canada. Okay.
I guess that becomes a pretty big deciding factor.
Yeah. It was a fairly early, you're a Canadian. Well, I guess we know where we're going to live.
You mentioned you worked your way up performing, you're traveling around all over the world. I'm guessing just wherever would take you and let you perform?
Not quite. I've never been that kind of that brave. There are those sort of, what do you call them, pioneer street performers. I always found like the least amount of work way you could work in that... If you do the same kind of show as everyone else, and you've got to be better than everyone else, you do a slightly different show, then a festival is like, great, a different kind of show. From the point of view of sort of slightly lazier working as a street performer, that was sort of, you know, tiny bit of creativity at the beginning, and then you just get booked because you're not juggling, essentially. so sort of that was... I was usually invited. I think once or twice I had that kind of, hey, this is great, I'm really doing it, but I'm way too timid and cowardly to actually really do that. I like the illusion that I'm just turning up and doing a show. I think I did that in Oslo, and that was nice. But mostly it was, you know, doing a festival and being invited.
You mentioned, like, you're a bit timid there. I guess it's kind of interesting. I find a lot of people that get into comedy have that kind of personality trait, that they're very shy and timid in a lot of ways, and then they kind of force themselves to just get on stage and do things. Have you noticed that yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I think what it is that I often compare doing a show to... you ever watch like Pride and Prejudice and those kind of period stuff, right? And there were all sorts of rules about how you talk to people, where... You know, it's like, and you know you're going to talk about this for this amount of time. This person's going to watch. Of course, if you study any history, you can't be honest, intelligent, and nostalgic. But you, very slightly, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of envious because, you know, I talk to someone and I'm like, hey, I watched this thing about a serial killer. I'm not a serial killer. And people just start to back away. But it was like, if there were these prescribed rules of what we're allowed to say and you're supposed to talk for, then I'd be like, oh, great. I can deal with that, but it's when left to your own devices that you can't. I find a lot of comedians, it's like, I don't quite know how to play the game the way everyone else does. And so as a result, on stage, it's almost the same thing where this kind of anything goes, but there's no expectation that you're going to say normal things. Like, you know, I have so much trouble with people, you know, so being English, people are always like, oh, football. And I can't. it's really difficult to tell someone you're not interested in the thing that they're interested in and that they think you'll be interested in without sound coming across as, I hate you with everyone you've ever met. So on stage is such a much more freeing thing because essentially you can go on stage and say, I hate you with everyone you've ever met. And people go, well, he's playing that kind of character. I don't hate anyone, so it's a poor choice. But I think that the freedom, the sort of the, I think a lot of comedians maybe have a bad mask. And so in social situations, we kind of mess up and we're like, you make those little jokes and people just stare at you. Whereas on stage, it's like, you're allowed to do that. Great, now I can do that well. It's funny, people often, they often say to me, you should just be yourself. And it was like, yeah, I've done that, and it doesn't work. I'm there, remember? I've been myself in social situations that have gone wrong. It's not a lack of confidence that just a hairdo and removing my glasses while pretending I ride a bike will solve. It really is I've had too many people stare at me to think that there's a simple solution.
Because of all the different aspects of performing that you do, I noticed that in the 80s and 90s, there seemed to be a real disconnect between the various forms of comedy, like stand-ups didn't hang out with improvisers and sketch people. But now it seems more and more comics like yourself are adept at more areas. Have you noticed a shift in the scene yourself?
I guess maybe. Now you mention it, like I still remember when I was doing street theater and I started doing stand-up because it was a girl I wanted to impress. It felt like it was after that that a lot of the stand-ups would be like, they didn't necessarily have like a disrespect, but they were like, I could never do that, it's terrifying. And meanwhile, the street performers were like, I could never do stand-up, it's terrifying. And then since then you meet people, I could never do improv, it's so terrifying. And obviously everyone's scared of the thing that they don't normally do. I think you're right. It's funny, I hadn't really thought of it more than it just happened to be my friends that started to do other things. There was just a thing that happened in Toronto recently where a bunch of female sort of comedy performers of various different things all got together and were like, we're all doing stand-up for the first time. And it took me a while to go, like, for a second I was like, but you've always done stand-up. I was like, oh no, I guess you haven't. And
you're kicking off the Winnipeg Comedy Festival this year with a show with your name in the title. Do you feel any pressure with that, or is it just kind of exciting that you're getting to lead things off?
I hadn't felt pressure. Just that, like, I think it's interesting. As soon as you say that, I'm like, I guess I should. I should feel pressure. He's right. I can't take it. It's one of the nice things about Winnipeg is like I've done the Winnipeg Fringe every year since 2000, and also I did it in 97. So I feel very safe with audiences in Winnipeg. They're the audience I imagine when I write a show, they've never done anything but exceed those expectations. So in a way, it's just a really nice thing of having that sort of responsibility, I guess, of opening and that joy, that privilege of opening the comedy festival. Plus, I mean, the nice thing is this show. The other problem with doing like distinct 1-hour shows is I always find if I do them for the first time in Winnipeg and then I might drop some jokes and then I put them in a different show for the next year. And I'm always like, obviously nobody cares. But I always have this idea that there's somebody there going, nope, I remember that. She did that show 4 years ago and that same reference was in there. And it was like, but if you saw the show I did then now, that I've dropped that joke. So I'm always kind of worried about that. And so this having first Gibbs is really just a genuine, I'm just going to take my favorite and hopefully my strongest bits and just put them all together in a way that they've never been before. And it would be the first time that I've ever had to not worry about that. Because, like, in The Fringe, if I do a show and it's like, yeah, I did a gibberish many years ago and then did it again recently, and then Chris Gibbs from the neck up was one, and then I would take some jokes and put it in another show and then bring that to Winnipeg. And I was always so nervous that there would be people who cared. And I guess, I mean, that's sort of I don't know if that's a British thing, just a me thing or a comedian thing, that you're capable of being pessimistic about two mutually exclusive things. It's like, there's going to be an audience of people who hate me, and there'll be no one there. Like, logically, that can't happen, but somehow you go, everyone's going to really remember everything I've ever done before, and they're going to judge me based on whether they did it before. So that one tiny neurosis is going to be not there for the first Gibbs show. And George Westerholm, who when they said he was going to be in the show too, I looked at some clips and I like what he does too, so I'm quite excited about that. It's going to be a very nice show. I'm sort of going to bring out some physical things that I don't necessarily get to do in the same show, like none of the old street performer stuff, but mainly because I eat a lot more now and drink a lot of beer, but people would be killed. But to do some of that, it's going to be, I'm very much looking forward to it.
You mentioned performing here every year for the last 11 years, I guess, at the Fringe Festival, and you feel comfortable with the audiences here. Have you noticed a distinctive difference between Winnipeg audiences and the rest of Canada or elsewhere in the world?
That's interesting. I guess it's a weird one because there's nowhere else I've performed that many times. Like Edmonton comes close. Yeah, so, I mean, certainly they seem very, very positive. I guess it feels a bit like they get into that conversation, like from my point of view, where things go really well is where you sort of almost don't remember what you did. And you kind of come away from it. And I've had that where the next day I'm like, I didn't, no. And I had think that they're playful in that way and allowing you to go. There's sort of a trust that, like, we've seen you before. We know you know what you're doing. Go off, do that if you want to, and we trust that it's going to be okay. And you have that sometimes in other places, but I think when I think of that feeling of, wow, I didn't expect it to go there. That was so much fun. We could never do that again. It just couldn't happen. And if we tried, it would be very embarrassing for everyone. And I think of Winnipeg as that's a city that's happened to me more in.
You've been doing this for a couple decades now. Are there any shows or accomplishments that particularly stand out for you up until this point?
I never thought of it as a couple of decades. It's really depressing. I don't know. What's nice is looking back at, like, to the point where I have forgotten some things. You know, I remember, you know, you have that thing where you try and write a bio for yourself, and it's like, I really want to be more successful, so somebody else does this. And I think it was one specific one, and I just was like, what are the weirdest things I've ever done? And it was like, as I'm trying to go through this list, and then these other odd things keep adding to themselves, like playing a professor of accidents at some Belgian corporate gig and in New Zealand, like, I forget even why I did it, like jumping into a stream of what was actually just a moving cesspit. It was a really stupid thing to do. And you know, while being this kind of zombie, it was part of a show. It made sense. People laughed. I hurt my ankle. But still, it was like, but almost immediately afterwards going, yeah, don't do that. That was not a good, that was not a wise choice, even though people laughed. It's funny, actually. I just opened an old diary today, and the first time I did a radio play for the CBC, and I was like, oh, I did a radio play. I did some acting. And because obviously in my old diaries, I turned into a more British person. I actually looked back at that. I was like, wow, that was a weird, those things that you've done and that you don't even question anymore. But I was like, oh yeah, there was a time when I was like, I can't do this. They're wrong to book me. Whereas now it's like, I love doing that stuff. As soon as you say accomplishments, there's a part of my brain that shuts down and says, this guy's called the wrong number. It's funny. I was just talking today to my son. My son is 3.5, and there was he was born essentially 2 days before the Toronto Fringe in 2007, and I happened to be doing two different shows. I was doing one of my shows and a musical based on The Inconvenient Truth, which was very fun. And I was playing David, among other things, David Suzuki. And I got to sing Kick Him in the Nuts and Punch Him in the Asshole, which was the show-stopping number of the show before David Suzuki did a whole bunch of backflips and karate kicks. And it was a weird time. Like, I had a three-day-old baby. I'm going off to do a one-hour stand-up show and then this musical every day because they were both in the same venue, so I was able to do two shows a day. And then coming home, and my wife would be there with my son on her chest, and I'd take him, and it was like the most exhausting period, but just everything tied in together. I don't know how it would have been if the show hadn't been going well, but the show's going well. So it's like, great, I'm supporting my family, doing this thing that I love, And I get to come home every day and just sort of, you know, give this kid what he needs and hold him on my chest. And then at the end of 2 weeks, I had to go to Winnipeg. So then it went from like, wow, I'm loving fatherhood. I'm really responsible to, I'm away from a baby who's 2 weeks old. And my poor wife's looking after him on her own. And after 1 week in Winnipeg, a friend of mine there sort of went, hey, I just realized you've now missed a third of your child's life.
Oh, wow.
I was like, why would you say these terrible things? And then I think I mentioned it to an audience. I was like, and he said this. And then he heard about that. He said, oh, you used my joke. And it was like, it's not a joke. I was complaining about how terrible you are. So I guess, I mean, that sort of would stand out.
Yeah.
I did a Canadian independent movie that had a brief moment where you were like, hey, this is that thing when you watch those making of things and you go, oh, that would be a cool job. And there was one day where we were in like giant sumo suits running around that it was like, oh, this is that day where you go, and it is a cool job. I like this.
With all the different areas of performing that you do, is mm-hmm. is there anything that you prefer over others, or do you just love whatever it ends up that you're doing at the time?
I think that second one, like there's a few things that obviously the stuff that's new is in some ways more exciting, but in the same way it's the stuff that's kind of in the bag that you're not worried about anymore is also, there's something wonderful, there's something very, very joyful about that based on the not worrying about it. Like, you know, when I go off and do a TV show, I'm a lot more nervous about the three lines in some scene than I am about a one-man show. But at the same time, it's, you know, it's very exciting and it's fun and so on. Yeah, I have it right down to the individual shows because I have a tendency to do, like last couple of years, I've done quite a big summer tour, fringe tour, with doing, I think last year I did 5 different shows in different cities, and the year before was 4. And it's the same thing, whereas like, if I've been doing a show for a while, I'm like, oh, I can't stand the show. I want to do one of the others. But then when I'm in each one I'm doing, I'm like, I really like this one. I don't know why I don't just do this one all the time. And then you get to do a different one. It's like, no, this is the one. Cause a lot of my one man shows are slightly different. Like the Antoine Faval, 2 shows are kind of a play, a one man play. It's very silly and stand-up-y, but it's still a play. And then The Power of Ignorance is sort of a character-based mock motivational seminar. And then the rest are pretty much stand-up shows in sort of different ways. And you just get to enjoy things in different things. Like there's sometimes when I'm doing Antoine Faval and something happens in the audience or there's something odd in a setup, and I'd be like, oh, I wish I was doing one of the other ones because then I could do this. Because I tend to, I think it's based on when I was a street performer, my favorite stuff was the stuff that can't happen any other day where somebody's walked behind you or, you know, some kid's doing something odd and you have to, anytime the audience is looking at that instead of you, you have to basically sort of shove yourself in front of it and go, no, I'm improvising here, and deal with it. And so within my sort of theater shows, that has tended to be something that, that apparently differentiates me. When you compare it to stand-up, it's like, no, a lot of people do that. But in the theater, there's a lot of, wow, he stopped what he was doing and talked to the person talking, which is really just like, no, you were listening to them. I know that I'll never be more interesting than the scenery falling over, so I will jump in front of that scenery. And it's all part of the show. Did he do that on purpose? Wow. How often does he break a leg? It's actually quite nice in Toronto to have a chance to sort of build a bit of an audience with something like I just over the last couple of years been doing a regular improv show once a week, and then now a second one. We just started an improv soap here in Toronto, and to have people know who I am from that, and then they're like, oh, I heard you're doing a one-man show, and then to then they see that and they go, wow, I didn't know you did that all the time, and that was great, and that's quite fun. So it's actually quite fun sort of doing it all.
Finally, our site's based in Winnipeg, but we have visitors from all over the world that check us out. So for anyone listening elsewhere, outside of Winnipeg, where can they see you in the next little while?
Well, I guess anyone in Canada, the CBC Comedy Festival gala show that I did last year, is I think airing next, True Stories and Other Lies. Other than that, like I'll be in the UNO Festival in Victoria doing a couple of different shows in May. Toronto is there's the Carnegie Hall show is a regular thing that we do every Wednesday, improv show, and then the improv soaps every Monday. And Calgary, I'll be doing the Calgary Fringe, and possibly something in Edmonton. There's something quite interesting potentially going to happen in Edmonton during their Street Performance Festival, which will be weird because that was the first gig I ever did in Canada. It's completely skewed my view of Edmonton. I was like, wow, it's this wonderful artistic city. It's funny, actually. I get very defensive about, I think, both Edmonton and Winnipeg. Like, I love Toronto, but occasionally, you know, when I say, I'm going to the Winnipeg Fringe, and people are like, oh, you poor thing. And then I get very, you have no idea. The Winnipeg Fringe is the greatest fringe in the world. The Canadian Fringe circuit is unique. Like, there's nowhere else like it. And it's almost offensive that Canadians don't know what a great fringe circuit they have. And even in Winnipeg, 11 years later, I've been coming back for 11 years, as does everybody who ever comes to Winnipeg Fringe. And they come back and do more shows. And people are like, is it really a nice? Everyone says it's a nice fringe. Is it really? Like, Edinburgh. Surely Edinburgh. It's like, stop it! You guys are great. I can't think if there's anything else.
Online, people can check you out on the web and that sort of thing.
I have a few clips online. I'm actually, there's a web series that's been in the editing phase for a long time called The Penumbra, about a superhero who isn't, basically. So a few clips sort of on my website, chrisgibbs.ca.
Showbizmonkeys.com.